Hello, and welcome to another edition of New Books in Systems and Cybernetics, a podcast channel of the New Books Network. My name is Tom Scholt, your host from the University of British Columbia. With all of its entailed engagements with epistemology, emergence, and self-organization, cybernetics began, and arguably still is, the science of communication and control in the animal and the machine, as it was coined in the subtitle of Norbert Wiener's field-defining book of 1948. While the reflexive turn of second-order cybernetics in the 1970s led the field down new paths, and unfortunately to the margins of mainstream academia in the West, Soviet thinkers continued to develop the control scientific implications of the field in a matter that remains central to the scientific enterprise of that nation. In his densely packed book, Cybernetics, Past to Future, out from Springer in 2016, Dmitry Novikov provides a detailed and erudite analysis of the field's development as a kind of meta-science or philosophy of the varied strands of control theory across technological, biological, and social systems. As the current director of the Institute of Control Sciences of the Russian Academy of Science, Dr. Novikov is eminently qualified to guide readers on a journey through the promises, challenges, disappointments, achievements, and future prospects of the science of control and communication that will also introduce a global audience to the work of many eminent Russian thinkers in the field whose work has not been as accessible outside Russia as is deserved. And so now, without any further ado, let's turn to my conversation with Dr. Dmitry Novikov. Dmitry, welcome to New Books in Systems and Cybernetics. It's great to be talking to you all the way from Moscow.
Many thanks.
And I'm noticing we're hearing my cat in the background, so we may have a little guest who might have a few questions of his own, but we'll try and keep his involvement to a minimum. So as we always do on the New Books Network, we're going to start with a general question about your overall biography, your sort of academic trajectory, maybe a little bit about where you are now in terms of what is your academic home, or your journey towards the field of systems and cybernetics. And I know that you give us a little bit of an indication of that in quite a lovely dedication to your father at the very beginning of the book, who you say opened the world of cybernetics to you. So if there's anything you feel you want to tell us about that, that would also be great. But tell us about your journey through academia and through your studies into the field of cybernetics.
Okay. I think that on one hand, my way to science and my way to cybernetics was traditional, because I graduated the Faculty of Radio Technique and Cybernetics of Moscow Institute of Physics and Technology. It's a traditional way. Non-traditional way is the following. When I was a second year student, my father have given me the book of William Ross Ashby, An Introduction to Cybernetics. I read it and I was astonished that it was just some other cybernetics that we learned in the institute, in the university. Because in the university we studied many mathematical details, very beautiful mathematical models with different applications, and mostly in technique. But in the book of Ashby, I have seen a general glance on some regularities, and they were described by a very, very simple words, without some heavy mathematics, but these were really scientific results. And I think that this acquaintance with this great book of William Ross Ashby was the start of my way to cybernetics. Then I graduated from the university, graduated the postgraduate courses, had my candidate dissertation, doctor of science, professor, corresponding member of Russian Academy of Science. And during all my scientific life, I work in the Institute of Control Sciences. It's a former Institute of Automation and Remote Control in Moscow. It's an Institute of Academy of Science. And as you understand, control and cybernetics are very, very closely tired. So I spent all my past part of the life in this great institute, and I passed the way from engineer to the director of the institute, and nowadays I am a director of this Institute of Control Sciences. So for the last 30 years, my life is closely connected with cybernetics and control.
Great, thank you. And it's interesting, one of the interesting things about your book is, for someone like me, situated in Canada, your references are full of Russian references that are, for me at least, largely unknown in the West, in the so-called West. Yeah, it's amazing. And your description now of your journey towards cybernetics really marks a difference between the kind of trajectories between cybernetics in Russia and the former Soviet Union, and in America and the rest of Europe, where we sort of traditionally start with Ashby and this much more non-mathematical way into the subject sort of opens it up to people like me who come at it from the humanities, mm-hmm. And the sort of an interdisciplinary spirit of the initial Macy conferences. So it's fabulous though that. I'm hoping a lot of the references that are in your book I'll be able to find in English, because it's a whole wealth of authors yet for many of us to enjoy and discover and learn from, outside of Russia.
You see, there are different understandings of cybernetics, and these differences are not only geographical or political, as it was between the cybernetics in USA and in the former Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. But there are different glances on cybernetics, a glance from mathematicians, from physiologists, from humanitarians, and so on. As for the classical cybernetics, Wiener cybernetics, I think that two main schools of classical cybernetics were in the United States and in the Soviet Union. Until the end of 1960s, they developed rapidly, and I can say that one of these branch was more successful than another. They developed intersecting, sometimes parallel, due to the problems of sometimes of contacting with the colleagues from another country. But it was a very fruitful period and very intensive development of classical cybernetics. And many, many books from the USA were translated in Russian. As far as I know, many books were translated from Russian to English, and they were available to the scientists of the both countries. Then the period of the second order cybernetics began, such names as Heinz von Förster, Maturana Varela, and other classics of second order cybernetics. They were not so popular in the Soviet Union because Soviet cybernetics was rather more mathematical.
Right.
And since this time, the divergence increased. But yes. Originally, it was the same root. Maybe there were two great branches, but they had the same root and many, many intersections.
Right, and it seems certainly that the degree of influence that cybernetics was able to have over the larger fields of science and then in the academy at large remained much stronger in the Soviet Union than in the United States, where after AI took off and other sort of branches of information theory, et cetera, cybernetics was kind of, as a discipline in itself, was sort of pushed to the margins and has sort of continued to sort of fight its way and tried back towards the mainstream since then, whereas the cybernetics remains central to scientific endeavor in the Soviet Union, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that you are right, and cybernetics were introduced in the courses in universities in Soviet Union, and it was very popular. And I think that nowadays we have several dozens of departments of cybernetics in different technical universities or in general universities.
Well, I can say that with that. Yes. Well, I can say that with that comment you just made, there are cyberneticians all over the rest of the world turning green with envy, because the idea of establishing a department devoted to cybernetics in the rest of the world is a long way off. There's certainly, obviously, departments devoted to systems, like ones at the University of Hull. And in the UK, the systems tradition is quite strong. Mm-hmm. And you do get some discussion of cybernetics in those places. But certainly... Russia seems to be a place that's continued to take the field very seriously in a way that's been a greater challenge, particularly in places like the United States and up here in Canada. So thank you for that. Let's move into a bit of the book. So the book is called Cybernetics from Past to Future. And why this book and why this book now? What was your principal aim in deciding that this was the kind of book that we needed now? That is, I don't want to call it a survey because it's much more too detailed to call it merely a survey, but it does give us a sort of overview of the field with a lot of detail along the way, and then some ideas about where you think the field is headed. What led you to think that this was a book that the field needed now?
I think that there are two reasons. The first reason is that many years ago, maybe in 70th or 80th of the last century, cybernetics has lost its influence. There were a lot of expectations about its future successes, but no great successes followed, and many people turned their attention to other sciences, and the term cybernetics has become a classical one, but not so significant that it was in 60s or 70s of last century. I think that the role and the potential of this science is underestimated. And I thought that it's necessary to attract attention of scientists from different fields, attract attention to cybernetics again, not only to its history and modern state, but to explain to the professionals that cybernetics may be useful for them in their sciences, and that it's not a dead science, it's a living science, and it will develop further. It's the first reason. The second reason was that nowadays students don't know the cybernetics as some general science. Our students, even in my departments of control sciences, they study control theory, adaptive control, robust control, and so on. But they don't study and they don't understand that there are some general laws, regularities of control in systems of different nature. These regularities may be applied to human, to a machine, to a society, and so on. And it's a great drawback of education in control theory nowadays that students are very narrowed in their knowledge application. Then they cannot see the whole world around. And I guessed that maybe such a book about the history and future or cybernetics will be useful for the students. And it was the secondary reason.
Right. And are you able to use it now as a textbook in some of your courses?
Yes, I use it in my courses. I have recorded a set of video lectures, but in Russian only.
Right.
And they are maybe found in the internet. And I think that we must do our best to popularize cybernetics, its possibilities, results.
Mm-hmm. So very similar reasons to why I approached Marshall Poe of the New Books Network in order to start this particular channel. Very similar mm-hmm. reasons that are sort of motivating a lot of cyberneticians around the world. So we'll start to go into this to the structure of the book. And in this next question, I certainly won't ask you to tell the entire history of cybernetics, since we've got a lot of things, other things to talk about as we move along. But you trace out this arc about the beginnings of cybernetics in a kind of romantic period, and then followed by the disillusionment of juvenility and the decay of maturity. And of course, we don't want to leave people entirely with a picture of decay, because this exercise, of course, is all about mm-hmm. demonstrating that cybernetics is still alive. But if you could just trace for listeners just a little bit of that arc, and also along the way, maybe discuss the criteria you mentioned for the survival of a synthetic science, which is one of the ways you define cybernetics, and the epistemological functions of a science, and maybe how that weaves into this arc that you've described.
Mm. You have mentioned different meanings, different functions of the science. It's a very fruitful way to analyze the history and the presence and the future of any science from such a gnoseological point of view. You see, any science and its beginning is trying to describe something. This description level is, I guess, is too simple for cybernetics. Because it's devoted to the generalizations. I think that cybernetics starts from the second level of gnoseological maturity, such as the function of explanation. First, you have to describe something, then you have to explain it. Okay? And cybernetics is very useful in finding explanations from different sciences to the processes and events in some certain science. And it's very useful applying results of one science to another science. And it allows to obtain new results. Okay, it's the second function of science, explaining. Then the third function is forecasting. Due to the interdisciplinarity of cybernetics, it allows to forecast some events and trends basing on the experience of one science, translating this experience to another science. And the highest, the fourth level of the fourth function of science is the normative or prescriptive function, which says how do we, should we act. It's equivalent to control. How should we control the object, the system, to turn it into the desired state? And it's the main object of cybernetics. How should you control different systems of different nature and so on? So I think that cybernetics is efficient at the three levels of three functions of science, explanation, forecasting, and normative function.
Great. You talk in the next section a little bit about interrelationship between control philosophy or with control philosophy and methodology. And there's a very interesting section where you talk about philosophers going way back several centuries as the early control theorists and also philosophers as the torchbearers for cybernetics during the sort of disillusion period in the 1970s. And you also speak of cybernetics essentially as control philosophy. So can you tell us a little more about that relationship between philosophy and cybernetics?
Philosophy is the essence of any science. And really, if we turn to the history of mankind, to the history of science, philosophers were the only scientists for many, many centuries, maybe till Middle Age, when the diversification of sciences appeared. It's on one hand. On the other hand, every science which have achieved some results needs for self-reflection. You see, if we'll take an example of physics as the most popular example of ideal science, mesiological ideal science. At the end of 19th century, at the beginning of the 20th century, the philosophy of physics appeared, and it develops for more than a last century, reflecting, generalizing, explaining new results in physics, searching for interrelation between different branches of physics, and so on. And I guess that the following statement is true, that any science achieving some gnoseological level of development tries to generate a meta-science, which will explore the original science. In this sense, cybernetics may be treated as the meta-science for control, for communication theory, for system science, and so on. So, in some sense, cybernetics is the philosophy of control theory. But it belongs to the control theory, not to the philosophy.
Great. That's great. Thank you. You then describe, and again, this is not something we'll ask you to list exhaustively, as you do in the book, though. I mean, this book is 105 pages, but I've never read 105 pages so packed with detail. It's really, really quite remarkable.
Thank you.
But some of the... Yes, it was a pleasure to read. Some of the laws, regularities, and principles of control that you catalog for us, what are some of the most significant and overarching trends as you see them? And a couple of the areas that caught my attention, and speak about them if you wish, or if there are others you think are more important, please do. But the principles of complex systems functioning, as well as biological systems functioning. But again, any of the major laws, regularities, or principles of control that you think are particularly significant, can you tell us about those?
Okay. Cybernetics as a general science about control, communication, and so on, about general regularities, should formulate and study these general laws and regularities of control. And now you may use such a simple test. Ask some of your friends, specialists in control, for example, ask them to formulate some general laws of control. And I am sure that they will say that there is the law of feedback. Then they will think for a minute and will remember the law of emergence. And maybe some another ideas about optimality, optimal or open systems, or required variety of SB will be mentioned, and that's all. I have implemented these tests first on my students. Students have failed this test. Then I applied this test to my colleagues, professors in control theory. And the result was the same. They have remembered the feedback principle, emergence, black box principle, and that's all. And that is why I devoted a part of the book to the laws, regularities, and principles of control. And I think that the main result of this chapter, of this block of the book, is negative, because some laws and regularities are listed there. Some of them are very well known. Some of them are known to specialists in particular sciences, such as in biology and so on. But the main result is that there are no general laws and regularities of control unified and well known to all the specialists. And hence is a great challenge to all the specialists in control theory. It's one of the greatest challenges to modern cybernetics to search for and to formulate a systematic list of these laws and regularities. So it's really a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that that it's because those laws have not yet been adequately formulated, or that it's just that the meta science of cybernetics has not been able to reach into those corners of specialization to the degree that it should?
I doubt, because there are a lot of details in any science. Maybe some particular formulations about some regularities of control may be formulated by the specialists in controlling social systems, leaf systems, technical systems, ecological systems, and so on. But we speak about the laws which are general to all the objects of control. And I don't know why we are not able to formulate it now, but I am sure that we have to do it. Mm-hmm. Maybe not tomorrow, not today, maybe in 5 or 10 years, but it's not just a challenge, it's a purpose of modern control theory, cybernetics, and so on.
Terrific. Thank you. And we'll get to some of that again when we get to your final chapter on cybernetics 2.0, the next iteration that you're forecasting for us. So can you talk about some of the developmental trends? I'm thinking of things like stuff around networks and big data, which is obviously a very popular topic in various circles these days. So some of the developmental trends, there's interest in networked control, shift from living systems to social systems. And you talk about a dialectical spiral, the social and technical in terms of the relationship between these, which has, of course, been at the core of cybernetics for a long, long time. Again, the search for generalizations, generalizable laws, et cetera, that go back and forth from technical systems to biological systems to social systems, et cetera, which has been, again, the sort of sponsoring... Oh, we have a guest.
Sorry, it's my daughter.
That's okay.
She returned from skiing.
Oh, nice.
Sorry.
That's okay. So the dialectical spiral between social systems, technical systems, biological systems, which has really been the kind of sponsoring quest of cybernetics right back to the MACI conferences. Maybe you can tell us a bit about that as you outline some of the developmental trends in the field that you identify in the book.
Okay, let's start from the main attention paid to the different objects of control from the historical point of view and I absolutely agree with the idea of the dialectical returning to the same objects, the same problems on the new level of development. I think that some ancient people, they were thinking about mostly not on the problems of social control, but of problems of control of some technical systems when inventing the wheel and so on. Then maybe in ancient Egypt and some other several thousands before Christ, the development of new states took place, but I guess that the main attention was still to the problems of social control. And since Plato and other philosophies, ancient philosophies of the and the Domini period, we see the research on the problems of social control. Because cybernetics, the term cybernetics used by Plato meant the control of society. But it originated from the governor. It was the a man who drove the boat. Yes?
Yes.
And then the intention, maybe in Middle Age, turned to the technical systems, the problems of controlling technical systems. Then at the 18th or 19th century, it turned again to the social systems, and Henri Marie Ampère, in his classification of sciences, he have put in cybernetics into the political sciences, as well as Trentowski, the middle of 19th century, he considered cybernetics as the science of governing people, society, and so on. Then in 20th century, especially in the second part of the 20th century, when the control theory and the mathematical communication theory started its great development, and tremendous results in the development of the technical systems, in the control of technical systems, they illustrate that at this period the main attention was to the control of technical systems. But since the end of the 20th century and nowadays, we see that more and more attention is paid to the control of social systems. And since the end of the 20th century, when a great amount of quantitative results in biology, in pharmacology, in physiology appeared, it led to the start of the interest to the control in belief systems, biological, medical systems, and so on. And I may assume that the 21st century will be the century of control of social and belief systems. I hope that it will be so. And cybernetics must follow, and control theory, they must follow this trend. The second trend, which is stressed in the book, is the trend of so-called networkism. You see more and more networks around you. Technical, informative, social, communication, production and other networks. Nowadays we live in the world of networks, but it's not too correct to state that we have transferred from some hierarchically structured world to a networked world. The picture is much more complicated, and I think that the adequate model is the hierarchy of networks and networks of hierarchies. And it's a great trend in control theory and with applications to the control of production, energetics, and so on. And of course, one cannot forget about the big data. This phenomenon appeared 10 years ago, but I am sure that from one hand, it's a very useful tendency and development adequate, for example, mathematical technique to operate with big data in real time is a challenge for mathematics from one hand, and it gives new opportunities to the analytics on the other hand. But I am sure that the big data is a fashion, and you will forget about it in the next 10 years. About this term. It's my forecast. Let's discuss it in 10 years. You see, because the definition of big data as a set of data which you are not able to operate efficiently in adequate time, it's not a true and correct definition, because it depends on your abilities. For example, with our modern abilities, some problems which were very difficult and, for example, 100 years ago or 30 years ago. Now they are very simple, and any student may solve these problems. And maybe some data would seem big today, or they wouldn't be big in 10 years or 50 years and so on. So this relative definition, it's a fashion. I am sure that it's a fashion.
Well, yes, in 10 years we will have a discussion about that, because you do identify this conundrum of when our capabilities in terms of the data we can generate have outstripped our ability to use them, and you use the phrase choking on data. But it sounds to me like you're quite optimistic that what you call big control is sort of rising to the challenge of what is being called big data.
You see, control is just impossible, especially feedback control, without information. It means without data. And if you handle with a control system which is described by big data, hence maybe you use the term big control. But it means that maybe you should not apply the methods of big data analysis to control this object. Maybe you'll first try to understand the nature of this object and build some simplified model of this object. And in many cases, using of the simplified model is sufficient for efficient control, and you don't need to apply big data. I may give an example from the physics, from astronomy and physics. Astronomist Tycho Brahe spent 20 years looking on the movement of the planets. And his records about these observations for the 20-year period it was really a big data for his period. Imagine, nobody could not operate it in real time, nobody could not handle it in minutes or hours. But then Kepler appeared, who have written his three laws of planet's movement, and he was basing on the experimental data of Tycho Brahe. But when these three laws, experimental laws, were written on the paper, the necessity in the records of Tycho Brahe disappeared. You don't need this data if you have an adequate model, empirical model. And then genius Newton, Isaac Newton, appeared, who have written one theoretical law of gravitation. Yes? The law of inverse squares. And all the three laws of Kepler were consequences from the law of gravity. And all the observations of Tycho Brahe may be generated from this law of gravitation with proper initial positions of the planets and so on. So you should not enjoy the amount of your data. You'll first think about its nature, and you should find or construct a good, simple model.
Mm-hmm. And again, that's the quest for cybernetics that you're talking about continuing to find these generalizable principles across these diverse and complex branches that we've been talking about. So I'm going to ask a question I probably should have asked much earlier in this interview, but can you say something about the word control itself? I mean, I think there's been different uses of the word, or different perhaps folk understandings of the word control. And it's one of the things that has made certain people in North America and other places outside, particularly outside the Soviet Union, during the time of the Cold War, the idea of the notion of control as a word applied to social systems has made people very nervous. And this whole thing, I can hear you laughing already, this idea of cybernetics as the science of control from above. And this is probably, again, perhaps a laughable question for you, but there are folks out there who still, the idea of applying the word control, that you, when you think of a technical system, to a social system, their minds immediately race to some kind of dystopian idea. Is there anything you would like to say to any of our listeners who still perhaps harbor some of those notions?
On one hand, the nervous behavior of common people when speaking about the control and application to the society, to a human, is reasonable. Because on one hand, any institution such as state, government, corporation, tries to control its agents, citizens of the country, employees of the corporation, and so on. And the second aspect, which is much more important, is that during the last 20 years, maybe 20, maybe 15, maybe 25, the opportunities of such a control increased greatly because due to the development of the informational communicational technology, on one hand, you can rapidly obtain a great amount of information. You can connect with anybody in the world. For example, we are now sitting in different countries on the deep, just opposite sides of the earth and speaking about the science of cybernetics in real time. But at the same time, all this information may be obtained and may be used for some other people. And how should they use this information? And what information would they put in your hand by showing something by TV, by showing you something when you're opening internet and so on? It's a great question. And I think that it's a challenge for the humanity, because we don't, we have not realized the threats of the rapid development of technologies. Because according to the, I don't like the theory of Kurzweil with his singularity explosion, yes, but I'm sure that the characteristic time of development of technologies has become less than the characteristic time of humans' understanding of this development. Because when in the 1940s, scientists invented the atomic bomb, first they realized all the danger of its militarist application. And you remember the letter of Einstein to Roosevelt and so on, who said that it's very dangerous to apply this nuclear power in militaristic affairs. Scientists had time to realize what are they doing. But nowadays, I think that when inventing new technologies, especially in informational communicational technologies and in the sphere of leaf systems, you invent something new, much more intensive than you are able to realize what it is positive features and what are the possible dangers for you and for the all the people around you. So the problem is not so simple as the control of some certain person of or society or group of person. The problem is in the development of mankind.
Yes, very much so. Can you say a little bit about the specific work on this, germane to the question that we just dealt with, on the relation between macro social description and the micro description of individual agents in a social system simulation? This is something that's a particular fascination for me in the work that I do. I come at this from a much different perspective than you and many others, in that I come at this from the world of the theater, believe it or not, and using using the theater as a modeling facility for complex social systems. Because I'm exactly interested in the micro description of individual agents and the way that can be missed out in macro descriptions. Is there anything you identify this as a challenge in the book? Is there anything you can say about continuing efforts to get better at getting at the micro descriptions within social system simulation?
Okay, I'll start from referring to my latest book, the book of my postgraduate students and me. We published it last year in Springer. It's called Mob Control. It's just devoted to the transfer from micro models of social behavior, of threshold behavior, some particular models of behavior, to the macro models. Are right that it's traditional for all the classical sciences, starting from physics, to try to first to conduct some simple model of the low level of describing the interaction of certain agents and so on, and then turn to the macro description of the system, turning from micro to macro behavior. Statistical physics is an excellent example of such a transfer. Yes, you start from the model of ideal gas, and then you can transfer to the statistical physics, which operate to the probability distributions, and so on. And nowadays there are a lot of research which are trying to pass this way, to start from, for example, some random graph of the social network, which is has the characteristic size of 10 millions of agents, and then reduce this complex model to some simple model when this society of interacting agent is described by one differential equation. But the problem is to formulate such a macro model that will be adequate to the initial system or the micro model, the detailed micro model of this system. And main problems are in finding such a correct, simple macro model, which will be adequate to a micro model. In the book I have mentioned, and the book devoted to the problems of mock control, we obtained several differential equations which efficiently describe the interaction of millions of agents, for example, in mobs or in online social networks. And when having such a simple model, you can formulate and solve the control problem. For example, if you want to excite the whole network, how should you impact on certain agents or some fraction of agents in this network to generate the excitation of the whole network? Such a control problems are efficiently formulated and solved. It's a very interesting field.
Well, I'll definitely have to keep my eye out for that book as well, and perhaps we'll get you on again to discuss, obviously, some very interesting findings.
I'll send you the reference on this book, okay?
That's great. Thank you very much. So we're getting close to the end of our time together, so we should maybe talk just a little bit about the conclusion, Cybernetics 2.0, and your sense of where cybernetics could be going, where you think it ought to be going. You identify cybernetics as forming the integral modern scientific world outlook, which I think is quite a profound and sort of provocative statement. And but the real detail you offer here, which I'm interested to hear more about, is your replacement of the word communication in Wiener's original definition of cybernetics as the science of communication and control in the animal and machine to organization. So can you tell us a little more about what specifically you're trying to get at by swapping out those words, and what the implications of that are for your version of Cybernetics 2.0.
Okay. If you read thoroughly the several papers of Norbert Wiener, which were published in 1944 with his co-author for Rosenbluth, and if you read the book Cybernetics and Cybernetics and Society, you will see that Wiener paid many attention to the some causal effects, the effects of reasonability and causality in the description of any system, physiological system or technical system. And it's a very brave idea to guess that Wiener, maybe he was implying this interrelation between events, between parts of the system and so on, when he was speaking about the communication between them. But his communication is necessary but not sufficient for a complex system. And this idea of replacing the word communication by the word intercommunication lead us to the more general category, such a category of organization, which is used, maybe used in three meanings. Organization as a property of some system, the condition or manner of being organized. An organization as the process of organizing of something. And organization as organizational system. And I believe that this category, the category organization, is very fruitful in comparison with, in completing with control. And looking on the problems of systems and of systems organization and control, first of all, give us an opportunity to put together system all the system sciences with cybernetics on the same ground, with no details which is a system science, what is cybernetics, what is control theory, and so on. And if you read the book Tectology by Alexander Bogdanov, which was written at the beginning of the 20th century. It's a great philosophical book. Bogdanov was writing about the necessity of conducting some general science about organization of any kind of systems, of natural systems, artificial systems, and so on. And it's a pity that in a century ago we have not developed these ideas to some adequate level. And I guess that the next level of development of cybernetics may be based on considering it as the science of systems organization and control.
Terrific. Thank you very, very much. You've been most, most generous with your time. Particularly, I know it's well past working hours in Moscow right now, so I really appreciate you being with me tonight. So our last question, what are you working on now?
Now I'm working on the book, which is called The Methodology of Complex Activity. I think that it's a step in development the theory of organization, of Bogdanov's theory of organization. So it's some development of cybernetics to the field of the organization theory. Thank you very much, Tom. I was very glad to have this very interesting discussion.
Yeah, thank you very much. And we look forward to your future work. The development of Bogdanov is something that we've waited a long time for, as you mentioned. So we'll definitely look to have you on again to talk about that in the hopefully not so distant future. Thank you very much, Dmitry.